Sometimes all I think about is you. Late nights in the middle of June. He waves been thinking.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's just a total mystery to me why conservatives, any of them, it's not all, but a few, are meeting with protesters who are making their way here for Canada Day, given the history, given the public distaste. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't know what they think they can gain from flying this close to the sun. I really don't. They're just going to get burned, aren't they? I also don't understand, for the life of me, I don't understand why they're coming. I really don't. I've seen some interviewed already. The one guy who's already got in trouble, he's a soldier, a reservist, and he was making comments about vaccines or something while in uniform. He says he's never seen a divide like this in any country except in a war zone. I don't know. Has he been in any war zones? But okay, really, is that... That's not what I'm feeling. I'm not feeling that kind of divide. Are you feeling that kind of divide? I think the U.S. has that kind of divide. Are these just another bunch of Canadians who mix up Canadian news and events with American news and events? I don't know. I don't know the answer. A few of them are saying now, this is no longer about vaccine mandates. Okay. This is about our overall freedom. I really don't feel like I lack freedom. Maybe there's a general frustration and anger with the Liberal government and Justin Trudeau. Okay, I get that for sure. But they don't articulate it very well. And I just think if you tie yourself too closely to it, I noticed Pierre Poilievre's camp was kind of distancing themselves a little bit because earlier in the week, there was a tweet by some of the protest organizers saying, we just had a meeting with Pierre Poilievre's people and they're going to welcome us there. And his camp said, that's not actually true. We didn't meet with them. But we do support people's right to protest. So do I. Absolutely. They want to come to Ottawa, protest all you want. Maybe get your act together and have a message, because that would be helpful. Because, you know, just protesting for the sake of protesting is going to just annoy people. Right? Okay, you're disrupting me. Why again? You can't even articulate why you're here. Go home, please. You're annoying me. But hey, it's a democracy. If they want to come and protest peacefully, which is what Pierre Poilievre's camp is saying, they support peaceful protest. He gets a little close to the sun as well, though, because there's almost a wink to freedom, right? He keeps talking about, you know, if Canadians want to come and protest for their freedom, who could be against that? When you put it that way, of course, yes, absolutely. It's a democracy. But I just don't understand what the grave concern is about our freedom at the moment. I'm not really feeling that. If it's vaccine mandates, okay, that's kind of behind us. And the government, I still think that the Liberal government is baiting the Conservatives a bit with all of this, because it's true that there's no need for them anymore. How many people do you know have had COVID in the last couple of months? Raise your hands. Oh, what? Not both hands, sir, while you're driving. Raise your hands. Okay, so a lot, right? How many of you had vaccines? Almost the same number of people raising their hands. So what are we doing here? You can still get it. You can still spread it. It's not very effective. It's still somewhat effective at preventing some of the spread if you just got vaccinated and blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, but none of that is reason enough to say you have to have a vaccine mandate to fly. They need to get rid of them already. And if they were coming with that specific message, okay, fair enough. But the danger is, of course, if it gets out of hand and you're one of the Conservatives who's backed it, what does that do for you? It just seems like a huge gamble, and I'm not sure I see the upside. There's a new poll out today. Somebody sent me a copy of it that showed that Pierre Poilievre would have trouble winning his own riding right now. He would still win it, but I'm not sure how much meaning a poll like that has. I mean, can you think of a more hypothetical situation than if an election were held today after we just had an election, would you still vote for the guy you vote for? Because I guess what they're trying to suggest is now that he's the potential leader of the party and has taken some controversial positions, would you rethink your vote? Some people maybe are thinking yes, but I don't know. I didn't do the poll. I don't know what it means, but There's a risk there. There's a gamble. They must see an upside in it that I'm not seeing. If you're running for leadership of the Conservative Party, you're going to find more support for the trucker protest among Conservative voters than among any other voters. So maybe it's helpful there. But is it the ultimate goal to be the Prime Minister? And I still don't know. I just still don't see how it helps you there. In fact, I think there's a net negative to that. Anyway, they're coming. And if they're peaceful, I say good on them. But I really like to know why. And here's the other thing about it. All I want to talk about right now, and all my neighbors and friends are talking about right now, is the cost of everything. That's it. Nobody's talking about anything else. Nobody's talking about freedom. Nobody's talking about mandates. You know, there are people, I still see people wearing masks occasionally. You want to wear a mask when you go out? That's up to you. I'm not forced to, so go nuts. I might still occasionally reserve the right to wear it in certain circumstances. I haven't found many of those circumstances now that it's summer and I'm outdoors. But that's fine. Wear the mask. But people are not freaked out about it. In fact, they just want to go out. I want to go to movies. I want to go to concerts. But what the hell have you been to the grocery store? Have you bought gas? That's all people are talking about. I don't know why they're not just focused on that, not tying themselves to a bunch of people who are coming to Ottawa who don't know how to articulate their message, who may or may not get carried away. Stats Canada, I mean, if that doesn't focus your mind yesterday, see the inflation consumer price index yesterday? 7.7%. In general, everything costs 7.7% more than it did last year. People are saying, I just got the biggest raise of my life. I got a 5% raise, and I'm actually making less than I was a year ago. That's pretty frustrating. Royal Bank's Assistant Chief Economist Nathan Jensen says it's definitely hotter than expected. This is why when a lot of the experts are saying, if we have a recession, it'll be mild. Yeah, but you said there'd be no inflation. So I don't trust you or believe you anymore. The Bank of Canada is going to keep raising interest rates. There's no doubt about that. And we're expecting another 0.75% next month. Here's Nathan Jensen.
There aren't really a lot of good reasons for them not to at this point. The overnight rate is still historically low in Canada at 1.5%.
Yeah, they say that a lot, huh? It's still historically low. Sure, yeah, I mean, if we go back to the 80s, but for a whole lot of people, they have not been, as an adult, subjected to this kind of inflation. They don't care that it's historically low. They bought their house based on the current interest rates, which were historically normal for them. This is what, how far back do you need to go in history to feel better? You know, they were higher than this in the late 70s, early 80s. I saw 14% mortgages. Yeah, well, most people didn't, so they're freaking out a little bit. And there are definitely people out there who don't quite understand if their mortgage is locked in, it's not going to affect you. There's a little bit of confusion about that. And if you have one of those floating mortgages because it's a little bit cheaper, I didn't take one because I thought, well, it's a little bit cheaper, but mortgage rates can only go up from here. So I locked in last time I had a chance about a year ago. So I'm locked in for another 4 years. So that's a lot of time for this to settle down. That's 4 years from now, Bill's problem. So if you're not locked in, lock in. Lock in right now. I'm not a financial expert. I'm just telling you as a friend, talk to your financial expert. He'd probably tell you, or she'd probably tell you, or they'd probably tell you, somebody'd probably tell you, lock in. Because it's not going to get lower. So I don't think there needs to be as much panic about that. Some people don't really realize, well, okay, my mortgage rates won't go up next month because I'm already locked in. And at any given time, mortgages are expiring and people have to renegotiate. And that, I would not like to be in that position right now. That's certainly not fun. But that's it, right? The cost of everything is what people are talking about. Not some freedom protest. In a country where I still feel like I can go out. Listen, it's such a free country. You can come to Canada and protest even if you have no clue why you're there. You're not going to get arrested until you break a specific law. So that seems like a lot of freedom to me. Oh, I don't have the freedom to spread a deadly virus by walking around coughing on people? Okay, that doesn't seem like an unreasonable restriction on my freedom. It is, however, not where we are right now in this pandemic with this version of the virus this particular summer. It's not. And so if the Liberals wanted to do something about these protests, they'd lift those mandates right away. That would stop some people from coming, but some people are just looking for a protest, and they're coming anyway. Those are not the people I tie my political future to. But again, I may be missing something. 6:15, the Morning Rush.
It's been 56 business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
So you didn't get your passport yesterday?
No.
Daisy did not get her passport?
Did not get her passport, no. I like a lot of some of the negative social media reaction we got to the story yesterday. Like, you guys know there's bigger issues in the world, right? Not saying
there
are.
Who said that?
Brian Lilly retweeted our commentary on passports yesterday. He is a lightning rod on social media.
Well, we know there are bigger issues than that. So, what does that even mean? Why people feel like they just have to criticize social media? You can't sound smart unless you're critical. No, you can smartly support something. Of course, there are bigger issues than the passport issue. There are also smaller issues
for sure
than the passport issues. And you know what? We talk about those too. That's ridiculous. Do people expect when they go to their favorite newspaper website that there will only be one story and it happens to be the only story they think is important? It's with nothing but the war in Ukraine. That's it today. That's all. Well, then I'd say, well, what about inflation? There are bigger stories than the war in Ukraine. Well, they're kind of related, but it doesn't matter. I only care about that. Oh, okay. Well, if you're trying to travel right now and you're camping overnight at a passport office, you probably care about that right now in this moment even more than you care about inflation because you're about to lose $10,000 you just spent on airline tickets to go visit grandma whom you haven't seen in 5 years. Of course, there are always why do people think that's a smart criticism? Slow news day?
Right. Okay, so
yeah, actually, sometimes it is.
Then the other comment that I got a lot was, because today's day 56, maybe you should have applied earlier. What's an acceptable wait time for a passport? Because I'm closing in on 12 weeks.
Well, first of all, they're not paying attention. You could not possibly have applied earlier. You know why?
Why?
Because she's still a fairly new human being.
Right.
And you have no immediate travel plans.
Exactly. I ticked the box that said no immediate travel plans. And so my thing probably
she's
got put at the bottom.
Daisy and you're beyond criticism in this.
I know.
You are not a guy who booked a trip, then went to look at her passport and went, oh, damn, this thing expired last year. I want my passport tomorrow. Oh, you are not that
I'm
guy.
I'm waiting on the passport before I book any plans. I'm just watching the government incompetence at work here.
But did you see yesterday a government minister saying, I wouldn't book any plans right now if you don't have a passport?
Yet, the only way you can get an appointment at this office is to show an airline ticket, apparently.
Right, because those are the only ones that they're rushing through.
Unreal.
Now, it is true, from a practical point of view, I would not book a flight if I didn't have a valid passport. I just wouldn't.
No.
But when the government boils it down to that, like they have just given up. They've just surrendered.
That's it.
Right? And federal government especially, municipal and provincial governments deal with most of the things that impact on you every day, deliver most of the day-to-day services, right?
Your garbage, your
driver's
license,
your, and healthcare, and picking up your garbage, you know? The federal government is like bigger picture. They give money to the provinces so that they can deliver those other stuff. They don't do a whole lot other than passports. Do it better. The other one is immigration, right? Here we are. We have a huge labor shortage, which adds to the inflation and a massive backlog of immigration. People who've been approved to come to this country waiting for final paperwork can't come. We don't have any workers. We got to do something about that. Well, pick up the pace. Get moving here. Call some workers back from home. Put them in an office downtown and supervise them to get it done. You know, I'm going to get emails from federal government. You don't know how it works. We're working from home. We're doing just fine. I'm sure some of you are. You know what else I'm sure of? You're human beings. And it's human nature. I've spent my whole life living with human beings. I know that's shocking. But here's what I've found. There's about 10% of the people that I've worked with in my entire career who are really ambitious and work really super hard. And then there's a bunch of people in the middle who kind of do what they need to do, and they're happy to clock in and clock out. And then there's another bunch they're not doing anything. They're just sitting at home watching TV, wondering where Oprah went. What happened to the Oprah show? I don't see that anymore. There's that. And then there's the other little sliver. They're really ambitious, but not to work for the government. So they started a business on the side while collecting the money. So come on, don't tell me every time, every single federal worker is at home right now working every minute they're paid for, because I am not as stupid as I look. I know people. Bill, you're a hypocrite. You're working from home right now. Yep. And if I decide right now to go sit by the deck in the next half hour and just watch the water go by, I think you'll figure that out, won't you? Yeah, because I'm being supervised, right? My boss, he can, how many of your bosses could supervise you naked and you can't make an HR complaint, right? My boss could be stepping out of the shower right now, listening to me, to every word, totally naked, and that's fine and legal. I can't escape my boss. So don't even waste my time with that stupid email. It's just a slow news day. We'll put it in that pile. We can multitask. It's a four-hour show. How many days for Daisy?
56 days.
It's been
56
business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
Boy, what a shot this is for Tim Stützle. His second goal of the season. Stings this one off the inside of the post and into the back of the net.
At the rink with Gord Wilson.
Well, the Avalanche, Nazem Kadri scored in overtime last night, and they're up 3-1 against the Lightning in that Stanley Cup final series. That's a, if any team can overcome that deficit, I guess I'd put money on the Lightning. But Gord, that's a tough one. Stanley Cup final against a team that looks really good.
Yes, absolutely. And Tampa Bay, I thought, for the most part, did everything they were supposed to do but win on home ice, which, you know what, is a real good sign that destiny is in the hands now of the Avalanche, a team that overcame, I think, a little bit of the odds after losing Game 3 and losing rather badly. But again, we said that about Tampa Bay when they lost 7-0 after Game 2. They bounce back and win. They lose a heartbreaker last night. Now they've lost two in overtime. And they have a great opportunity to extend the series. But boy, oh boy, is it going to be tough, because there seems to be that will from Colorado that just comes out when a team is that desperate. When you've got your best player and Nathan MacKinnon, and boy, we've got our pick of best players for the Colorado Avalanche, don't we? Cale Makar ranks right up there as well, and he's probably going to end up getting the Conn Smythe Trophy as the most valuable player. MacKinnon had 14 shot attempts on goal last night. 14, for heaven's sake. 8 shots in total on goal, and another 6 that were either blocked or missed the net. Makar,
he's pretty good, huh?
Oh, he's just absolutely dynamic. And, you know, you give him a little bit of extra space, and he scores a power play goal last night, and that's all he needs is, well, he doesn't even need the extra space. If he doesn't have it, he just goes through players. It's as simple as that. But you mentioned Nazem Kadri. It didn't take a face-off last night because of, what, was he 18 days off broken thumb and surgery, and he comes out and he wins the hockey game. In overtime, bit of a controversial goal as well, and I know we're dealing with numbers here, and boy, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players on the ice when the goal is scored. Interesting, but it is overtime.
Well, you've watched a lot of those situations.
Yeah.
And they allow a little leeway, right? You don't have to be on the bench before the next guy comes out, but what I'm hearing is Nazem Kadri was the guy who came out, and the man he was replacing wasn't off the ice when the puck went in, so that's a long time.
That is an awful long time. Now, the play happened very quickly, only because, boy, oh boy, Darcy Kemper, you want to talk about bounce-back games, the goaltender of the Avalanche comes out to play the puck. And, I mean, he played the puck from, if I'm not mistaken, left somewhere inside the left faceoff circle to get it up to Lekkonen. It's instinctive for these players on line change situations, because Tampa Bay was changing as well. It's instinctive for them to move the puck as quickly as possible. Darcy Kemper comes out, plays the puck as quickly as possible, puts a tape-to-tape pass to Lekkonen, who turns and puts a slap pass right onto the stick of, somebody who put, well, he did come out early. And Boy, it's it's an interesting play and an interesting call, rather, and look at the call because clearly there were six on the ice.
Yeah, and then the puck got lodged up in the bar behind the crossbar and stuck between that and the netting. And so for an instant, everyone's looking around, where the hell did the puck go?
Yeah, including the shooter. Kadri didn't think. Look, I found it weird because he's a left-hand shot, comes down the right wing, cuts in on Sergachev, and fires one. And guess where this puck went initially? It went through the blocker body armor of Vasilevsky. And there's just been way too many shots get through in that area. And
I thought he'd squeeze the puck between his arm and his body because we didn't see it go in the net.
No, I know, and I think Kadri did as well, but it looked as though there's the potential that he got a piece of it and elevated it up a little bit higher, because it didn't look to me as though the angle of the puck was going to end up stuffed inside, you know, the bar of the crossbar. So, anyway, terrific play by Kadri. What a difference maker he was last night. Played about 18 minutes, and as I said, didn't take a face-off, but scores a huge, huge goal that is going to propel them into probably a Game 5 win tomorrow night.
Well, yeah, certainly wouldn't be surprising. Today, the NCC, we're going to talk politics and development.
Good.
The
good
NCC
stuff.
Is going to update us on what's happening with LeBreton Flats. Anyone who's involved in a bid there to develop it has been told they have to keep their mouths shut. So when you ask the Ottawa Senators, are you guys in this time? You were last time. It fell apart. But are you in this time? Their answer has been no comment.
No comment.
All right, they've been very tight-lipped. Now, the commissioner of the NHL has kind of said, yeah, the Senators are probably going to be in on that.
Yep.
So let's assume for a moment that the Ottawa Senators are going to go back to try to build an arena downtown. I think the timing is perfect. Downtown needs to be revitalized. The federal government saying it's going to probably reduce its downtown workforce in the long run. I don't see how you develop LeBreton Flats without a main attraction. And that, to me, is an arena where you can have hockey and concerts and festivals and fairs and conventions. And I just think it's a natural.
Just too much wasted land there, isn't there, right? And for how many years? Like decades, obviously. And there is enough space there to fulfill all the needs of what you just mentioned. And, you know, as soon as you started to talk about this, Bill, I immediately turned to Edmonton, the downtown core in Edmonton, and the new building in Edmonton, attached to a hotel. There's a practice facility there. It's a state-of-the-art billion-dollar arena, and it's everything. And Edmontonians absolutely love it and flock to it. And it's a little bit different in that it's right in the heart of downtown. I won't say LeBreton is right in the heart of downtown, but it will certainly expand the horizons of the downtown core in Ottawa.
Feels like it's not in the heart of the downtown because it's this open field, but it's a short walk from Parliament Hill.
Yep.
And downtown will connect right to it. Once it starts, it's all going to be one big flow. I'm not even a little bit concerned about that. And the LRT will finally be handy to get you somewhere that I really want to go. But I want to ask you from a hockey point of view, how much of a game changer is it for the team? You've talked about Edmonton. Look at Nashville. Tourists come in. They go to Nashville for the music. But they go, there's a hockey game on tonight right downtown. And I've talked to people who work in Nashville for the team who said it's been an incredible draw for last-minute walk-up tourism, which I think the Senators would have as well. People come to their nation's capital to visit it, and they might check out a hockey game. I just think it would be a brand-new start for the Ottawa Senators, the beginning of a whole new era for them.
Yep, I don't disagree. That's probably the perfect way to put it. And in this location, this particular location, it provides everything that's needed to do what you just said, and it provides those who do continue to work downtown. I had a discussion with Dom Morgante from Morgante Menswear down on Spark Street, and he's probably about a 20-second walk to the LRT, the proposed LRT pickup area from his shop, and he said it's just perfect. It's absolutely perfect for those who do work downtown. But then again, you've got the tourists who are coming in. And as we said off the get-go, there's just so much wasted space right now that this wasted space, not just with an arena, is going to fill up. And it's going to fill up with the potential of an aquarium, the potential of other things that are going to be exactly that attractive to the tourist area. And don't forget, we're also serving those who live across the river and work across the river, and those in Gatineau who have claimed they have been neglected for so many years because there is not a rink downtown, but a rink, you know, further west and more difficult to get to. So massive, massive opportunity for the hockey club to not only entice or keep the old fans and make it convenient for everybody to get to the rink, but entice new fans as well.
You know, you're going to have the NIMBYs who are going to say they don't want it there. That's not how they perceive it to be. They don't want the crowds. They don't want the... But I would tell them that their sons and daughters will probably end up working in the arena or the restaurants that will thrive around it. All of the other businesses, a hockey rink brings a lot of economic activity into a city, a whole lot more than we even notice.
Yeah.
And more than the current location does.
Oh, 100%. And you know what? Depending on who the partner might be, and there's going to be obviously someone or some company with deep, deep pockets that's going to be involved in this. If the Senators get tagged as the go-to organization that is going to help develop and redevelop LeBreton Flats, they're going to need help. And you know what? Depending on where that help comes from, it could very easily provide the opportunity for that building to be even busier than what Canadian Tire Center is. And that's probably not very hard to do. I mean, all you have to do is look at Nashville. Right, the downtown building, the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, and Nashville's obviously an entertainment city, not like Ottawa. I think it's the fourth busiest business or building in the National Hockey League. So it'll certainly provide much more opportunity for the Senators as far as revenue stream is concerned. Yes.
Well, I can hardly wait till 11 o'clock. And as Matt mentioned earlier, how often do you say, I can't wait for the NCC meeting? But today it's like game seven overtime. We're all excited.
I think there's going to be good news.
Thank you, Gord.
Thank you, Bill. Cheers.
Gord Wilson, the Ottawa Senators color commentator from TSN 1200. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Bill.
We're going to talk about Alzheimer's. Toronto neurologist awarded for work on his unconventional hypothesis that maybe it's an autoimmune disease. Let's start with, do you think that's true? Do you think that's possible?
Well, we don't know, but I think this is a reasonable approach to things. You want, up to now, we have had an incomplete or elusive reason why Alzheimer's happens to so many people. There are certainly clues, but there's no unifying theory, right? There's no unifying, what we call mechanism that what causes a disease. It's something that we call pathophysiology. Patho means the disease process. Physiology is in reference to how our body works. And so if you have a clear understanding of this, of the pathophysiology, you then can devise means to interfere with that process. You know, when you know how the guts of something works, you can fix it, or at least know how to approach the problem and change it for the better. So in this case, they're very clear, and he's very clear as well, that this is an hypothesis, right? It's unknown right now. It's just what he thinks might be the case. But, you know, you want to encourage all kinds of approaches to a problem that as of now has remained elusive to solve and continues to harm a lot of people. So if it is an autoimmune disease and they can show this, and by no means are they saying that this is what's happening, they're just saying, we think this is a possibility. And that's what a hypothesis means. It's like you have an idea, you think something is going to, that might be the explanation. And then you look for clues and evidence to support it so that it becomes a theory.
And how is that different from what we believed it was most likely to be before? I guess a guy who just reads a lot of newspapers, I'd say, I don't know, is it sort of like plaque building up in your arteries and it can damage can damage your heart because it blocks blood from getting to your heart. Isn't it something the brain is getting clogged up and so it's killing brain cells? Is that kind of where the thinking has been before on this?
Yes, so the thinking has been that there has been an accumulation of a protein or a couple of proteins called tau proteins and beta amyloid proteins that gum up and damage the nerves in the brain, the nerve cells and the neurons that interfere with their ability to process information, slowing them down, damaging them, leading to a death of the brain cells as well. And so that has been the observation, and that is there. I mean, you do see that. The question is, how much of a role does that play? And if it does play that role, how does that happen? Or are there other mechanisms that are happening in the background that cause damage? And this is a bystander or at least the end result, but not really indicating how you got there in the first place. And so that's what they're trying to find out. You know, are there genetics involved with that? Are there certain triggers that lead to the reaction that you see in the brain? Are there medications or chemical exposures that lead to that? Are there environmental influences? So those are some of the things that need to be answered. And so the award that's been given is not awarding him for the idea and saying this is the truth. It's awarding him so that he can pursue that idea and determine if indeed that is a possibility. And that's perfectly fine. There are all kinds of ideas that people come up with where they don't have the funding able to pursue that to see if this actually pans out. So the more out of the box thinking you have, the better. You never know what's going to happen. It's like when you see technology and research, you can't pick and choose technology. You have startups that happen, startups fail, but people provide funding for that because it might work. So it's the same thing. This might work. And if it does, the payoff will be fantastic in terms of providing help to people. But if it doesn't, you're still going to learn something. You're still going to know whether that avenue worked or not, or whether there was something in that research that can be used for something else.
Well, yeah, if you can actually figure out what's going wrong, then you can start to figure out how to fix it. If you don't know really what the mechanism is, where do you begin to find the cure, right?
That's right. If you find that this is an autoimmune disease, well, we have a lot of medications that have been devised to interfere with the immune system for other disease processes, you know, things like rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, certain cancers. And so if you know what the chemical is in the brain or in the body that leads to Alzheimer's through the immune system function, and you block that, you potentially can block the Alzheimer's from happening. So that's the goal of this. And so give more power to them. If you can find that out, fantastic. If you don't, well, you know, that's what science is. You try it. You try and see if something works. If it doesn't, you go on to the next thing.
I just got to correct one thing. With all due respect,
yes.
Doc, yes. Science is what your buddy with a grade 9 education says it is on Facebook. Have you learned nothing from this pandemic?
Yes. Yeah, I totally forgot. I sincerely apologize for my error.
Bill, you don't understand. This is what's really going on with COVID. I remember you failed grade 10 biology. That's what I remember. Thank you, Doc.
You're welcome, Bill.
Medical Myth Busting with Dr. Barry Dworkin, host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Guy with an actual medical degree. It's the Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's inflation, stupid. The Conservative Party aren't entirely stupid. I mean, they tried to have an emergency debate on inflation yesterday in the House of Commons. The Liberals ran away from that. They don't want to talk about that. Even those of us who are very reasonable-minded think, yeah, it's not entirely the federal government's fault that we have inflation all around the world, but how about what they're doing in the U.S.? If Joe Biden can give people a holiday for a while from gasoline taxes, there are things this federal government can do to make this situation a little easier, and their big announcement last week did none of it. That's not just me saying that. Just about every economist and head of bank and they restated a bunch of spending that was introduced when it had nothing to do with inflation. It's not enough. So for these conservative MPs who meet with the protesters that are planning to return, some saying they're going to stay all summer, ones that are coming on Canada Day, have at it. Look, on the surface, you're right. People have the right to peaceful protest. I don't have any problem with them coming here. As long as they behave, they don't break the laws, that's fine. Even a little inconvenience. The Supreme Court has already said, in a democracy, sometimes protests are going to be a little inconvenient. And it's interesting, when people agree with the cause, they don't care about the inconvenience. When they disagree with the cause, suddenly, they shouldn't be allowed to stay for more than 5 minutes. Get them out of there. Why do they don't wait so long for other people? That's actually not true. We've been very patient with indigenous protests where people have camped and stayed. Homeless encampments have stayed up for a period of time. We are a little bit patient, and we should be. But boy, I don't understand the logic. Two things about the four conservatives who met yesterday with the organizers of the protest. I don't understand why you take the risk, because if the protest does go south, you're going to be in big trouble. Like, you are going to be held accountable for that. People are going to blame you for being part of it. That does not help you beat Justin Trudeau on election. And those of us who really want to see the Trudeau Liberals defeated, we're getting a little sick and tired of the self-destructive behavior within the Conservative Party. We're getting a lot sick and tired of it. So you're tying yourself to this protest. Risky strategy. That's number one. Number two, do you actually think that's what people are talking about right now? This is about more than just vaccine mandates now. It's about our freedoms. What the hell are you going on about? Could you fix the inflation? Could you fix the economy? Could you help us get out of this mess? Could you spend every ounce of your energy talking about inflation? Yes, I'm glad the party tried to get a debate. Keep trying. Do whatever you can. Focus on that. It's the economy, stupid. It's not about freedom. Are you talking to anyone right now about freedom? Most average people are going, hey, sometimes I wear my mask, sometimes I don't, but I just want to go to a couple of concerts this summer. Blues Fest, baby. Bring it on. See you in Kempville. That's what they're doing. They're going to movies. If the Sens were in the Stanley Cup Finals, I'd be at those games if I could get a ticket, wouldn't you? I wouldn't be like, oh, COVID. No, I've got my vaccines. I've had COVID. I'm taking my chances. I'm going. And no one's stopping me, by the way. What freedom are you talking about? We have plenty of freedom. Meanwhile, the Royal Bank Assistant Chief Economist named Nathan Jansen says this hotter than expected pace for inflation means the odds of the Bank of Canada raising its key interest rates by another 0.75% next month is getting very high.
There aren't really a lot of good reasons for them not to at this point. The overnight rate is still historically low in Canada at 1.5%.
Conservative finance critic Dan Albus wants the government to give Canadians a tax holiday at the pumps. Points out that Alberta did that.
Trevor Tome is out there from the University of Calgary saying that there was a actual drop in Alberta's inflation rate because one of the key inputs to inflation is gasoline. So this is a way that we can both fight inflation and give people a break at the pumps so that they can pay for the important essentials that their families need.
Yeah, that message, that's a really important one, and that's why I wanted to squeeze it in. Gets lost a little bit when four members of your party, including a leadership candidate, meets with the organizers of a protest that pissed a lot of people off last time they were here. So maybe they think it's worth the risk because their supporters like it out in Alberta or British Columbia or whatever, but we'll see. I hope their logic pays off for them. I'm just not convinced it will. My conservative friends will call me after the show and say, you know, but the game is rigged. Game is rigged against them. They're like Leaf fans complaining about the refereeing all the time. The game is rigged. The media is focused more on those four people going to meet with the protesters than they did on our attempt to get a debate, an emergency debate. Yep, that's true. And you know that. You know how the rules are played. You know, right? You know where the focus is going to be. Don't I have anyone who ever worked in media working for that party going, you know what the headline's going to be tomorrow, right? But you can't stop them, right? They went rogue, and they're getting all the attention now. 7:17, the Morning Rush.
You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
/7:24 We're all going to get excited today if the Sens are part of this downtown arena bid. I think most Ottawans support it. I do. Even if you're not a big Sens fan, not a big hockey fan, I think most people could see the sense of having a great tourist draw, entertainment facility like a major arena as part of LeBreton Flats. And certainly, I can't think of many people in Ottawa who don't want to see it being built. But you know it's going to be about 5 minutes after the announcement today that people who think they want to be mayor of this city are going to stand up and say, well, we have grave concerns, right? They're just, we prefer to turn LeBreton Flats into a bicycle raceway or a bike storage facility for people who make their way on our bike paths into this lovely city in January, all five of them, and so they can park their bike. You just know, right? You just know they're going to be the NIMBYs who are against it. And how can you be against it? It's an empty field right now. And if you this is a once in a city lifetime opportunity to do something great. I just don't know how you do that without one. It's like you used to build a shopping mall. You needed one big client at least, right? Indoor shopping mall. Yeah, stores will come and go, but we need that anchor client. We need the Bay or Eaton's or name them over the years, the different ones that have come and gone. What do shopping malls look like now when the main client moves out? Simpsons is gone. What happens? It's a crap hole, right? Next thing you know, you're standing in line waiting to get a passport, camped out in an otherwise almost empty mall because Service Canada is the only people who moved in. You know what I'm talking about here, right? How many of these malls have just become derelict because they lost these main anchors? You need a main anchor. Would the Eaton Centre in Toronto have been the Eaton Centre without it? The Rideau Centre I still go to because they have a couple of big malls, the big anchors. Even Farm Boy, I think, is kind of cool in there. That was a great addition. But how long would they be there without some of the, like, without a major department store? What's the one they have in there now, the Quebec one?
They got Simons in there at the top.
Simons. Shea Simons, they call it in Quebec. Like, shouldn't it be Shea Simons? No, it's an English family. Oh. Fascinating family, too. Interesting guy. Great business. So, but you need that. And if it's not the Ottawa Senators, who is it? Is it the Red Blacks? Of course not. They have their own facility. They're about to rebuild it. So what else? What other major client other than our NHL hockey team is going to do that? Well, you could put a convention center there. Oh, yeah, that'd be exciting. Oh, a convention center. You could even probably do the odd concert in there. But no, I mean, you're talking about what? Between exhibition games and regular season games? 45, 46 games a year in the winter? And then you know the concerts that are Canadian Tire Center now are going to move downtown. I would suspect there'll be even more of them if it's a downtown location. Right? If you're a major concert promoter, like, oh, Canada, huh? Oof. Ooh, I've got an act that's pretty good, but I mean, there are certain acts you could put out at Canadian Tire Center and people are going to go. They don't care how far it's going to be. Right? The Rolling Stones final show, Canadian Tire Center, Canada Center. Sign me up. Right? But am I going to go there for an up-and-coming country act that's pretty good? Oh, what? It's downtown? I can go out to dinner, nice restaurant, walk across the street to the arena, check out the show, hop on a train, be home in no time. Yeah, okay, sign me up. So we need this. And you know there are going to be people who will argue against it. Let's just ignore those people. Because I'll be crushed today if they say, yeah, guess what? I know you're all so excited about it. I don't know where Gary Bettman gets his information, but nope, no involvement at all. Sens are not interested in any part, all or any part of this. So what happens to the city's plan to rebuild Lansdowne, though, if there's another downtown arena? Do we need two? That's going to be a big question, isn't it? Like, why would the 67s build a brand new arena? Wouldn't they just move in? I know they're two different countries, companies, and they don't always get along. So, but wouldn't that be, people initially will say no, but I remember when the Raptors were building an arena in Toronto. People forget this now. That was a basketball arena. And the Leafs came on board later when the Raptors went up for sale and the Leafs bought them out and then moved their team there. The Leafs were far down the road in planning their new arena. But they gave up on it. They realized, oh, there's a brand new rink right there ready to move into. You can still develop Lansdowne, refit the stadium, but do you have to build an arena underneath the lawn? Just leave it as lawn or put more parking underneath there. Be great parking with this city council. You know what? I've just proven I have no credibility at all. Okay, that's not going to happen. But do we need a second one? That's going to be one of the questions that will be asked. If, in fact, the Sens are part of this bid. And we'll all be shocked and disappointed if they're not. 7:30, The Morning Rush.
I got my peaches out in Georgia. Oh, yeah. I get my from California. That's that. I took my chick up to the
Good morning, Ottawa. This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Yeah. 7:38, so there's going to be another protest on Parliament Hill. And by now, you know, some conservatives met with them and they're in favor of peaceful protest. They support it. So do I. Just not sure this group that seemed to be coming here, not quite knowing what they're so mad about or unable to articulate it anyway. Not sure I'd back those people that blindly, but they're coming. And so we're apparently going to be much better prepared for it this time. There's even talk that we should close Wellington Street permanently. I'm not so sure about that, but the parliamentary security head says we need to do it. Charles Bordelot is the former police chief in Ottawa, public safety consultant, and our go-to guy during those protests, and he's back on with us right now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Let's think back now to those days where we were speaking almost every day and in the height of it all. Listen, there's no doubt it was at times... people felt afraid. There's no doubt about that. It was loud. It was obnoxious. It stayed too long. In the beginning, there were too many swastikas and too much hate speech, and we all agree on that. But do you think, like I do in retrospect, that the way we talk about this now, you'd think they'd burn down the Parliament buildings? I think there's a little too much rewriting history in a way that's not accurate. It was bad, but we've seen much worse in many other places in the world.
I think, though, there was an element of individuals that was their intent. However, I don't believe that it was the greatest intent of that group to go in and do like they did in the States. I think there was a mixed bag of individuals that showed up, that caught up in this movement of demonstrating against mandates or whatever their cause was. They got caught up in it and created quite the mass of individuals. But they were not all like-minded. But I'm sure there is a core group in that mass of individuals that came that truly wanted to do something to try and unseat government.
Yeah, but in the end, despite all the criticism and the kind of navel-gazing that's gone on, they didn't get into the Parliament buildings. They didn't cause major damage in the city. So when I hear the idea of closing down Wellington Street permanently, it makes me wonder if that's not the easy way out. While you were police chief, did that ever cross your mind that it would be easier to protect this city during the many protests we have to close that street down?
No, because you're always going to have a border between the Ottawa Police Service and the Parliament. I think what the question should be is, what's the problem they're trying to solve? If they're trying to prevent an occupation like what happened in February with vehicles, people, and erecting property, there are other ways to achieve that goal without closing Wellington Street permanently, much like they did with Rolling Thunder. They would close it off for that length of the protest and create an exclusionary zone and manage that demonstration in that way. But if you're trying to include, there are a number of buildings on Wellington Street that belong to the federal government. And, for example, the PMO's office is on Wellington Street. If you're trying to include those buildings and extend the parliamentary precinct to include those buildings and include that in that footprint, that makes sense to go right to Sparks and make all of that the new parliamentary precinct. You'd have to change the legislation to do that and have all of that area now the responsibility of the Parliamentary Protective Services, and you'd technically move the fence line back to Sparks, where then Ottawa Police would be have that responsibility. If you're doing that from a safety and security perspective to include all that, those federal buildings in that footprint, then that would make sense.
But like you've said, there's still a border, right? So you're still going to have a clash point. You're still going to have an area where protesters gather. You've just pushed them back, and then I think you've kind of pushed them back into more residential areas.
Well, you are, and you're still going to, I'm sure that Rideau and Sussex, although you now have the temporary Senate there, but I'm sure that that would not be part of Parliamentary Precinct, because you get the Château Laurier, you got Mackenzie, you got the U.S. Embassy, you got all those areas around that, and people are still going to show up there. The crowds are going to be there at whatever border that you are creating. So you know, people are arguing, well, you make it all part of one footprint and have a separate police service and deal with it. You are still going to have jurisdictional challenges and issues, and you're still going to have to work. You know, the Auto Police Service is always going to have to work with the RCMP and the Parliamentary Protective Services to keep all that area safe, and they're always going to have to collaborate in all of these types of major events and demonstrations. So creating extending Rollinson Street will not do away with any challenges with respect to working in a cooperative nature with all your public safety partners.
Yeah, there's a balancing act here, right? You want people to have access to their public institutions, be able to, I mean, it's good for tourism to be able to walk by, drive by, stand by your parliament buildings. You grew up here. I didn't. And the only times I came to Ottawa, well, once as a high school student, because everybody comes to Ottawa in high school to visit their capital. And then a few times as a broadcaster, you know, covering certain events. But it seems to me like there was a time when you could drive right up to the front of the Parliament buildings, right? It was that perimeter moved out to Wellington Street more recently. Am I remembering that incorrectly?
Absolutely. I remember as a kid driving up with my parents on the hill and doing the circle around the flame and right up to the hill. But there was an incident with a hijacking of a bus that took place, and the bus drove right up onto the lawn of the hill. And since then, they closed that area off to vehicular traffic. And then you've had other incidents take place where they've really had to bolster the fence. But
you can still get up there if security allows you. You can still bring vehicles in. The barriers can be moved, right? They come up and down from underneath the road.
If you have authorization to go up there, yes, you can bring your vehicle up. But there are several roadblocks that are put in the way in order to prevent any other vehicle from coming up and potentially causing damage.
So why not do that on Wellington Street? Why not? So we keep the street open. Why not do that? You can have barriers that can be, they could be there permanently, and you push a button and they move up and down, and you close them off. If like, hey, 1,000 trucks are on their way to Ottawa, we're closing the street off. You could do that, or you could just bring in temporary barriers that can do the job and then be removed. I mean, it just seems to me like we're taking this suggestion of closing Wellington is a bit the easy way out, and it has a lot of possible downsides that we're not thinking about.
Absolutely. And I go back again to what's the problem you're trying to solve. And if the issue is to have the ability to close off that street for vehicular traffic, then there are things that you can do on a temporary basis to make that happen. And Jersey barriers and those that go up and down are techniques that can be used to keep the area safe when you need it to be safer.
I mean, it doesn't look like Canada Day is going to be anything like what we saw in the winter, or we'd start to see trucks making their way now, I think, from the West Coast and the East Coast. But let's say it has that kind of draw and a huge number of trucks and vans and cars show up again. Do you have confidence now that we learned our lessons from what happened this year, and so we can prevent some kind of long-term lockdown and takeover of the area?
I do, Bill, and they demonstrated through Rolling Thunder. They have the ability now to create those exclusionary zones and prevent vehicles from coming into to specific areas, and they're better prepared to do that. And I'm sure that they're going to be starting, you're going to start seeing some physical things going up soon with respect to preparation for Canada Day. And Canada Day this year will be a challenge for them, because they have three sites You'll have the market day and night, which are different things. You have people that will come to Parliament Hill to celebrate, but also to demonstrate. And you now have LeBreton Flats, which is not that close by. So you're going to have to resource all of those three areas, at least for Canada Day, if not for longer terms because of the demonstrations and the new dynamics that are coming into play. So they need a solid plan in place. They need the resources. So I'm sure they're going to be tapping into RCMP and OPP and other police services to manage this this Canada Day. And hopefully that people will be able to go down in a safe way, celebrate the way that we always have celebrated Canada Day in a very positive manner. The challenge is you've got these individuals that are like-minded with those that came under the convoy protest and purely want to disrupt activities and cause harm. Although they say they don't want to cause harm to our residents and our businesses, that's the impact that they had in February. They tried that in with Rolling Thunder, and I'm sure they're going to try this again because they are very intimidating to regular people that live downtown.
The most important question I've saved for the end here, and I probably should have had Matt warn you. I don't want to ambush you, but this is going to be tough. I should have given you time to think about it. We're teeing off today at 11:30. Would you say that my chances of actually making contact with a golf club onto a golf ball are higher than they were at this time last year, about the same, or am I actually getting worse?
They're much higher, Bill. You're doing extremely well. So for the time that you've been golfing, you are doing extremely well. So congratulations on that. Now, whether there will be any rain between your golf club and the ball itself and moisture, that's the bigger question.
You're so diplomatic. Basically, I've gone from horrific to bad, and I'm pretty proud of that. I think that's a big jump.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Chuck's really good, though. So we remember I said we were going to bring him into that golf tournament, the fundraiser, and we're going to put. I went golfing with him, and I said, I wanted to ask you. He goes, yeah. And his wife said, it's already in your calendar. She'd heard us talk about it on the air and just added it. Charles is, so we're going to play best ball with him, Matt, and we're going to look really good.
I love it. I'm going to ride your coattails.
Yeah, he's hits far. He's accurate. He's really good. So we just, and you know what else he's the best at? You could tell he was once a detective. No matter where my ball goes, he manages to find it. He's like a golf ball hound dog, and he'll never quit on a ball, a lost ball. Thank you, Chuck.
Except those that go underwater, Bill.
Yeah, that's a little much, and I'll be like five of those probably today as well. And there's hardly any water on the golf course we're going to. Charles Bordelot, great golfer, former police chief here in Ottawa, public safety consultant. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Trending today with Matt Harris.
All right, Matt. Is this a town I can pronounce the name of, do you think?
I think so, but maybe I'll let them try to pronounce it first without... Well, it'll be obvious what it is. I guess I could just tell you.
So why are members of the Miami Dolphins trying to pronounce the name of a Canadian city in the first place?
Because they have a player from that town. So what they did was they got some of the players to pronounce other players' hometowns on the video. And one of their players is from Coquitlam, British Columbia. And Javon Holland is his name. And, let's see how his teammates did when it came turn to do the Canadian team. Here we go.
Coquitlam, British Columbia.
Not bad.
Coquitlam, British Columbia.
No, I'm not reading that one.
I know this one, but I don't. Coquitlam, British Columbia? Ooh. That's so wrong.
What? Coquitlam, British Columbia?
I don't know what this is. I'm not even going to try that one. Coquitlam.
Coquitlam,
British Columbia.
Coquitlam, British Columbia.
Coquitlam, British Columbia. Yeah.
Coquitlam, British Columbia. Who from there?
Who from there? It's our guy Javon. So, anyway.
Well, the word quit is in the middle. So if you had a second, but you don't, right? The guy's got the
camera on
you.
And they just hand you the sheet.
Yeah, you're under pressure.
What is that?
So you would try to sound it out, and it's co, qui, qui, qua. But once you break it down, there's a quit, and there's a co, and there's a lamb. A
couple of them did okay, actually.
I thought it was better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it wasn't the total disaster. The one guy was like, no, I'm not doing that.
Two of them. I'm out. Not even going to try. I hear Americans mispronounce Ottawa.
There's controversy in Toronto. Is it Kevin Hart is in a new movie out this weekend about the city of Toronto? And I guess they mispronounce it I don't know if it was in the movie or in the promo of the movie, and people were mad.
Because it's saying Toronto.
The hard T. Yeah, exactly.
Toronto. Everyone in the U.S. calls it that.
But that movie's out this weekend.
Y'all from Toronto? How do you say it?
Toronto.
Toronto.
Yeah. The movie is called The Man from Toronto, Kevin Hart, Woody Harrelson. It's on Netflix this weekend, and that's a big controversy right now.
Thing is, though, it's not wrong to say Toronto.
No, the T is in the word.
But if you're going to make people look like they're from there, they're not going to say Toronto.
Yeah.
But I know it's not Ottawa. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So the annual pace of inflation in May took off like a rocket. Well, that's where that word skyrocketed came from. Highest level in nearly 40 years. So unless you're over, I'm going to say 50, you've never seen or cared about inflation before. Never, right? Because if you were 10 years old, 5 years old, that was your parents' problem, not your problem. So it's been 40 years since most Canadians now even have to think about the rising costs of things. We used to complain, you know, we're getting a 2% raise and inflation is around 2%. So not really getting ahead. Now I know a guy who got a 5% raise and realized with inflation as it clocked in yesterday at 7.7%, he actually just got a 2.7% pay cut in the real world. That's incredible. Desjardins chief economist Jimmy Zahn says prices are rising right across the board, like a very broad range of goods.
More than 75% actually of the components are showing inflation above 3%. And, you know, 3% is the higher bound of the Bank of Canada's tolerance range. So, yeah, 3/4 of components that are essentially out of control.
And everywhere you go, this is what people are talking about. Definitely when you're lining up to buy gas, people are talking about inflation. When you're at the grocery store checkout, people are talking about inflation. Inflation, inflation, inflation. So much so that many Canadians are now worried that the only way this comes to an end is with an economic recession. And Yahoo Maru Public Opinion has done some polling on this. John Wright, the executive vice president, is on the line. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bill.
So how many of us are actually concerned about this and feeling like a recession's inevitable at this point?
Well, two separate questions. About 6 in 10 people are concerned about it. About, you know, a little less than that are concerned about the pricing and what they see at the stores and everywhere else. I think the bigger number here is that a majority of people believe that the Bank of Canada's hiking of interest rates, in fact, are not going to solve this. And, you know, I asked specifically whether they felt that this was going to fuel inflation or cool inflation, and the majority came back and said that if the central bank keeps raising rates the way it is, it's actually going to push us into a recession. And that was even echoed yesterday by the secretary of the head of the Fed in the United States. He used the word provoke a recession by raising rates. So I think Canadians are having a disconnect, Bill. I mean, if you take gas and food, they get that. If you, you know, but then after that, the top numbers are, you know, hotels are up 40%, furniture's up a lot, flights are up, you know, all kinds of other things are up. And there's a disconnect between you raise interest rates and it's associated with the housing markets. It's not associated with the 33% rise as a result of petrol that you can't do anything about. So people are really confused about what the raising of the interest rates is going to do to control inflation when they see it as all kinds of other external factors.
When was the last time you saw what appears to me to be a pretty volatile mix of opinion? You know, I wouldn't like to be in government at any level right now when people are thinking things are bad. The cure that we're seeing is probably not going to fix it, and things are only going to get worse. That's a recipe for a lot of anger, I think.
Sure. If you go back to the history of politics back to about the 1980s, when I can recall, and I was kind of getting into my professional life, you can see that most governments don't survive as a result of inflationary times. People will issue in a different kind of government, usually a conservative government, to get the spending under control. That's been what's happened. The last time I remember anything like this happening, and I got to say that if people listening today, if you're under the age of 40, you're not going to understand it whatsoever. But Mark Lalonde brought in, when I was in business at the time, the 6 and 5 program, which was trying to hold wages and inflation down to those particular numbers. In fact, when I was working for a financial institution at that time, we had little bronze badges that we put in the corner of our jackets that said 6/5. You know, that government went out as well later on. So I would say that the last time that I recall something that drastic coming in was in the early 80s, but then it repeated itself in the early 90s. And you and I will remember that when, in fact, the bottom fell out of the country and we had, a severe problem with financing. That then brought into the conservatives, them to kind of bring back the financial control of the country again. So, even looking south to the border, George Bush dealt with this and he was taken out. So, this is something which has politically volatile consequences. And the fact that, Pierre Poilievre was kind of castigated a few weeks ago saying the Bank of Canada doesn't know what to do. We got to do this and that. And they all said, well, they do know what they're doing. This is the kind of thing where you get people under the age of 40, you get others who don't believe that the raising of the rates are actually going to do anything about the gas tank and the groceries. That's where that sentiment starts to pile up.
Yeah, it's interesting because when the crypto market collapsed, a lot of people said, boy, that's the end of Pierre Poilievre. But I think he is tapping into something else, and that you're seeing it in your poll, this frustration that the Bank of Canada doesn't know what the hell it's doing. Look, we were being reassured for months that the inflation we were seeing was temporary and it wasn't going to be set in. And, we weren't going to have to deal with it down the road. And now we're being told this is the new reality for who knows how long, into next year at least. And some are even saying the only way out of it is to have a recession, because that always ends inflation. So maybe Pierre Poilievre's onto something. But can you use your political expertise and background to explain to me then why do you think some conservatives are tying themselves more closely now to the protesters who were here, the truck protests? Some of them are coming back on July 1st, and these cries of freedom. Is there a connection there? Is it monetary freedom that the conservatives think that they're tapping into? Because I'm a bit at a loss to understand why they're hitching their wagon to a movement that a lot of Canadians didn't like.
Look, I don't understand it as well, except that there's two parts to that. Number one is they, may represent constituencies so that they are, from the West, and that's where a lot of this is brewing from. But the second thing is that there's a leadership convention underway, and they want to make sure they sell memberships. And if they have sold memberships to a lot of these folks, then those folks want to have a voice at the table. I don't, it depends on how long this coalition holds together, Bill. If the NDP and the Liberals decide to keep everything together, for another 2 years, well, then they're not going anywhere soon. And it's going to be a while before we actually have to make some changes. I think the bigger issue nowadays is how do we in this country rectify the raising of rates and what it's going to do to people in their homes. And at the same time, we're going to be chasing higher wages to cover off the difference in the other parts of our world. That's going to be the difficulty. What has happened normally in the past is that they've gone after companies or sectors. So the energy industry, the grocery industry, things like that. I think most Canadians have no consensus as to where the inflation is coming from. They'll point to different things, but this is like, it's like natural gas that's released into your house. You can smell it. It's insidious. You know that it's there, and you damn well don't, you know, have a spark that's going to send it off and blow your house up. I think we're kind of at that stage where it's insidious. We're all grasping to try and control it, but we think that the central bank, by raising rates, is not going to do what needs to be done. And if they raise the rates, people start losing their homes, and we start demanding bigger wages. Well, that's not going to solve it either. So we're in a very precarious political situation right now.
Yeah, and people are realizing it. Thank you, John.
My pleasure. Take care, Bill.
John Wright, Executive Vice President, Maru Public Opinion. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
We have Jeremy on the line. He was our, not 15th because they didn't answer the phone, but he was down somewhere after 15th. Jeremy, where are you calling us from this morning?
Plantagenet.
Plantagenet. East of Rockland, pretty much. Is there anything east of Rockland? Yeah, you're out that way. Okay.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
West of Hawkesbury.
West of Hawkesbury. Narrowing it down. The point is, though, are you any good? I mean, have you been listening? Can you answer 10 questions in a minute?
I can certainly try.
Okay. Well, I like that confidence. Let's get started here. First, I'll give you the rules. 10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
I think so.
Okay. The key thing is don't get bogged down on one question. Say pass. Here we go. Question number one. Who scored the game-winning goal for the Avalanche yesterday? How many business days has it been since Daisy applied for her passport?
I'm going to go 8.
Who is the CEO of CHEO?
I don't remember, pass.
In which month will the price of milk go up in Canada?
August.
Which football team posted a video of its players trying to pronounce Coquitlam?
Pass.
Who is the conservative finance critic?
Pass.
What's the forecasted high today?
17.
How many times has the Bank of Canada raised its key interest rate recently?
3 times?
Which organization's board will discuss LeBreton Flats at today's meeting?
Pass.
Which condition does a Toronto neurologist believe may be an autoimmune disease?
That monkeypox.
Who scored the game-winning goal for the Colorado? I don't think the signal travels past Rocker. That's my impression.
It was a tough one.
This was a disaster, Jeremy.
All right.
Now let's find out how bad.
Let's see how you did here. It's not pretty. Who scored the game-winning goal for the Colorado Avalanche yesterday? You passed on that one. We were looking for Nazem Kadri. How many business days has it been since Daisy applied for her passport? You said 8.
It's been 56 business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
56. That's more than 8. Counting. Yeah. In which month will the price of milk go up? You said August. We were looking for September. Who is the CEO of CHEO? You passed on that one. His name's Alex Munter. Which football team posted a video of its players trying to pronounce the word Coquitlam? You passed on that one too. Miami Dolphins. Who is the conservative finance critic? We were looking for Dan Albus. Who is the? What's the forecasted high today? You said 17. 21. How many times has the Bank of Canada raised its key interest rate this year? You said 3.
Yeah!
There he is. He's on the board. Which organization's board will discuss LeBreton Flats today at its meeting? You passed on that one. We were looking for NCC. And which condition does a Toronto neurologist believe may be an autoimmune disease? You said monkeypox. We were looking for Alzheimer's. That is $10.
Ooh. Jeremy, you're slow this morning. Do you work at the passport office?
I just tuned in and I heard text, so I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And I don't think I did very well.
No, you didn't. No, it turns out if it's a quiz, you got to be paying attention. But we appreciate the effort, such as it was. Tell us how to pronounce the name of your town again, though.
Plantagenet.
Plantagenet. Everybody else just says Plantagenet. Plantagenet.
Well, I think it's a French way of saying it. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Which version?
Plantagenet.
Plantagenet. Merci beaucoup. Thank you, Jeremy. It's 8:30, and Gord Wilson is standing by, the Ottawa Senators color commentator, to talk about last night's very strange ending to the Stanley Cup final game, and what does it mean for the Senators if, in fact, they are part of this bid again for downtown arena in LeBreton Flats. All coming up, the Morning Rush.
Now, the Inbox. Everybody's talking about. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
All right, LRT, so now it's the fault of citizens, media, for bad decisions that cause problems, right? Yeah, public pressure. Yeah, we wanted it open, but we also wanted it to work. They also forgot direct links to the airport, LeBreton Flats. Poor planning. We're not the project managers, just like travelers forgetting what to do at airports. It's insulting. Angela says, please stop deflecting. Not sure if this was a topic of conversation today because I've been sitting in the emergency at the Ottawa Civic Hospital since 11 p.m. last night. Still waiting to see a doctor. What a nightmare. I'm never coming back to the emergency unless I have a limb literally dangling or 95% close to dying. Our healthcare system is totally broken in Ontario. Frustrated and sick. Mel in Mechanicsville. You know, my rule is if I go in and they take a look at me and go over there and wait, I'm like, well, I'm not sick enough. Bye-bye. That's how I look at it. That may not be smart, but. Elections Canada, 106,000 uncounted ballots. Elections are rigged. Freedom! Elections are rigged. There were some uncounted ballots, but you know what? It's sad to say this, but every ballot should be counted. But 106, statistically, unless they all came from, say, one conservative riding that fell to the Liberals, probably would have fallen out just about the way all the other ballots did. So overall, popular vote would have gone to the conservatives, but would have been enough to tip this election one way or the other. Stop it already. Elections are rigged. Trump was right again. During the last election, Trump warned that the war on petroleum and excessive government spending will drive up gas prices and cause hyperinflation. Biden hid in the basement. The media did not ask him any questions. Elections have consequences. Well, at least you admit that he was elected. Freedom from government overreach. This government is over-involved in the lives of Canadians on many levels. And there's a strong feeling that it needs to back off. Strong feeling of what and where exactly? It's a very small percentage of it. Do you honestly wake up in the morning and say, there's too much government in my life? Look, I get it if you're a libertarian, you'd like less government. We have more government in this country than, say, in the United States. And sometimes I agree with you. It'd be nice to have a little more freedom, a little less government involvement in things like, the dairy industry as an example. For sure. But at the same time, I don't wake up in the morning and think I live in the old Soviet Union. Some people are acting like they do. Who's coming up next? We just never know who's hosting 9 to noon. It's time for The Wheel of Hosts. Oh, I'm excited. Feel the nervousness building. Little.
Any guesses?
I'm going to go with Graham.
Andy again.
2 days in a row?
2 days of Andy.
The Wheel of Consistency. All right, there you go. That's it for me. Andy is next.